Janis Jackson from the Chicago Public Schools was on. She sort of gave her position. We even played some of the CTU's commercials so she could give her side of some of the points that they were making. But better that we actually talk to somebody from the teachers' union. The communications director there is Chris Giovannis. Chris is on line 7. Hi, Chris. You're on WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Thanks so much for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Are you at all on the negotiating team, or do you just stay in touch with the people doing the negotiating?
So I'm only intermittently in bargaining for the most part. It's our officers, our legal representatives, and over 40 rank and file members. These are teaching assistants, school nurses, social workers, school counselors, obviously teachers, English language teachers, special education teachers. We really have a bargaining team that represents every single group of our members and all of the needs that our students experience.
I wondered, we were talking to Janis about how physically you all do it. She was talking a little bit about that. I wonder if because there's so many people and so many interests, these things become unwieldy. One of the reasons it takes a while to get a deal done is because you've got so many people talking about so many things.
Well, first of all, I routinely attend the caucus sessions with our bargaining members, our rank-and-file bargaining members, and I find them to be an extremely unified and extremely focused group. And we do have demands on the table that are designed to address the myriad of problems in CPS schools. I recognize that CPS doesn't necessarily want to deal with any of those issues. They certainly don't really want to seem to put the language in the contract that really solves those problems. But I find it ironic that they're using democracy and transparency as an excuse not to move, when really, as far as we can tell, it's because they don't want to move in terms of making real commitments that are actually enforceable so we can protect our students.
What's the biggest roadblock right now?
Well, there are a series of roadblocks. We're still trying to get to an agreement to raise the wage floor for our lowest wage workers, our paraprofessionals, the teaching assistants and school clerks, and other frontline workers who really are the backbone of our school communities. One of our members on the bargaining team, Willie Cousins, has been a teaching assistant at Bond in Englewood, where he also lives for 5 years, and he makes barely $28,000 a year. That's not enough to support a family. His wife is working a number of jobs. He is working a second job at Walmart. We've got to do better for these workers. We couldn't run our schools without them. We literally could not run our classrooms without them. And yet, at the end of the 5 years of the contract that the mayor has on the table, these workers would still be making wages so low their kids would be eligible for free and reduced lunch under federal poverty guidelines. Over 1,100 of them today literally cannot afford a two-bedroom apartment in any zip code in the city based on prevailing rent rates. We've got to do better for those workers. But this is much more than a debate about wages. This is really a debate about the quality of learning conditions in our schools, about exploding class sizes, about a dire shortage of school nurses and social workers.
Chris, I'm going to play for you. Hold on. I'm going to play for you, if I may, because you're now starting to touch on some of the points that Janis talked to us just moments ago about. So if you don't mind, you brought up the class sizes, and this is LF Cut 1. This is what Janis Jackson said about the district's commitment to smaller class sizes.
If you live in a community that happens to have 38 first graders or some number like that, we can't just tell those 8 students over that number, you can't attend this school. What we have offered in writing is to make sure that we provide a teacher's assistant in that classroom in cases where that has happened.
What would you say to that?
Well, it would be great if it would happen, and it would happen quickly, but we have kindergarten classes with upwards of 40 kids right now who still haven't had a teaching assistant assigned. And I think it's terrible that they're suggesting that really we ought to stop caring about those overcrowded classrooms once you hit third grade. They have agreed at the table to basically, instead of providing a teaching assistant when a class tops out at 32 kids, for not just kindergarten, first, and second grade, but also for third graders. And they don't get those teaching assistants into those classes now for kindergarten, first, and second grade in a timely manner. We expect to have some overcrowded classrooms that still won't have a teaching assistant after the first of the year. And it means that every single other student in a classroom above grade three, if we were to agree to this, is still stuck in overcrowded classrooms. What that means for the kids at Simeon, where virtually every core class is overcrowded, is that you can expect upwards of 40 kids in a social studies class, a world language class, a math class. That's not fair to those students. And at many of these schools, these overcrowding problems have been chronic. At a school like Wentworth on the South Side, Gresham, Grissom, Ash, these are not new problems. These are problems that have persisted for years. I go to the school board meetings every month, and every month, parents from these school communities come and beg CPS to do something about this. I've been listening to them for 2 years, and nothing has changed. That's why we want guaranteed enforceable caps on classrooms. We want to create a disincentive for CPS to keep packing kids in like sardines and denying them the individual attention that they deserve from their teachers.
Let me ask
CPS
you this.
CPS can afford this, and they ought to do the right thing.
You know, and I know that if you and I get into a conversation about their position and your position on the money, I don't think we'll meet in the middle. But one of the things I ask, well, just because I know that the two of you regard the money differently, but I just wanted to ask you one question that came up at the very end of our conversation with Janice Jackson, and that was, have they asked the teachers to take less if the money that the teachers would give up would go to some of these positions we're talking about? What's your thought about that?
So I'm not at the table. I would say that any reasonable proposal is worthy of discussion. And for elementary and high school teachers who are at least making enough to put a roof over their heads, that's a discussion that ought to be had. For our lowest wage workers, we want them to have a living wage, not a poverty wage. And this is not just about the money for elementary and high school teachers. This is about the learning conditions of our students and the working conditions for our members. If you are teaching 40 kids in a split grade class, as some of our teachers are, you know, 15 third graders, you know, another 25, 30 fourth graders, you're teaching two classes, two curriculums, two sets of lesson plans, and none of those students are getting the attention that they deserve. And I got to tell you, CPS's argument about the cost really falls flat. They just passed a $7.7 billion budget. The offer that the mayor put on the table for salary increases is literally less than 1% of that budget. I can't believe that they can't find some wiggle room in there to actually adequately staff our schools, get our students the trauma supports that they need, and actually make sure the kids have enough boots on the ground to protect them, keep them safe, and educate them.
Here is another cut from Janice Jackson. Now, if this is cut two, it's talking about enrollment again.
We've also put in writing that we would work with our principals to make sure that they're not over-enrolling those schools and classrooms with students who don't reside in those boundaries.
Is that valuable to you?
As I said, everything is on the table that's a reasonable proposal. We have been ready to bargain and bargain seriously and try to come to middle ground that works for educators and, most importantly, works for students.
Well, I got to tell you,
we know that there are some schools on the north side, when they are over-enrolled, they actually get the capital funding from CPS to build an extension or even build a new school. The problem with that approach is that for schools that are chronically overcrowded on the south side, and this has been reported by news outlets like WBEZ, those black and brown majority schools on the south side and the west side never get the same kind of consideration in terms of actually expanding their physical capacity. We've got to end the separate and unequal approach to funding schools and supporting students that we have today in the city. And every school is under-resourced in the city, and CPS has an infusion of annual cash of upwards of $1 billion that is supposed to be used by the district to remedy exactly those conditions.
Janice Jackson took exception with that. She then clicked off a litany of places that that money is being spent, and she says that's a red herring. But don't respond to that. Respond to this. This is Cut 3, Elif. This is Janice Jackson on Earlier Today.
We put in writing what we think are solutions to this, and we're just waiting for a response that we don't get through the media, that we don't get through commercials, that we actually get in writing back from the union that is very different than the proposal, the only official proposal that we have on the table, which is what they gave us back in January.
That was surprising to me.
That's actually not true. This is the kind of disconnect that really baffles me, is it that there isn't enough of a solid, honest exchange going on between the mayor's bargaining team and the mayor and the CEO of CPS, because I find that absolutely astounding. And it is simply false. As late as Saturday, we presented another set of counterproposals that are designed to provide a framework to get to equity for every school while prioritizing the schools most in need. And I find it ironic that they have claimed that we are bargaining in public when, in fact, they didn't release their first salary offer to us. They released it to the press and the fact finder.
They have consistently
done that as late as Friday when they gave us their last best final offer, which included $400,000 to get four more nurses or four more social workers or four more counselors, or four more case managers, when we have only 113 school nurses today for over 500 schools. That's an insult to our members, and it's a slap in the face to our students.
I'm out of time, Chris, but would you say, how are things going, Chris? Are we making progress today? Are you optimistic?
What I'm hearing from the table is that there has been some movement. What we need is for the fifth floor to actually allow that movement to become real, to allow both bargaining teams to land language that we can take back to our rank and file that is going to meaningfully improve conditions in our schools. It's going to give us the equity and educational justice that the mayor promised as a candidate. That's all we're asking for. If it's good enough to put in writing for Lincoln Yards, for a $1.3 billion handout to a rich developer to build a new neighborhood for rich people, if it's good enough to put it in writing in a contract with Aramark, which underserves our schools and leaves them dirty and roach and rat infested, then it ought to be good enough to put it in writing for our students and the educators who serve them.
Well, the teachers will give a little at the bargaining table still.
Look, we understand how to negotiate. It sometimes is a question about whether or not the mayor understands what negotiating is. It's hard to say, you know. I understand that she comes from a background as a prosecutor where you're used to going hard to the wall and letting the judge decide. That's not how real negotiating works. We want to negotiate a fair deal. We're not interested in bankrupting CPS. We're interested in equity for our students. We are not unreasonable people. We work our tails off every day for our students and our schools and the families that rely on us.
Chris Giovannis.
We're asking for that consideration from CTS.
Is the communications director at CTU. Get back to the table. Good luck to you. I appreciate your time, Chris.
Thank you, Ab. Really appreciate it.
So there's both sides on the show today.